My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramerica. Other people want to make friends? Just trying to make you some money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you, so call me at 1-800-743-CBC or tweet me at Jim Cramer. Today, Wall Street decided that it's better to be sorry than safe, with investors going all in on the kind of stocks they'll be very sorry about if the good news from the past 24 hours fails to pay off. And that's how the Dow surged 912 points. The S&P rocketed up 3.15%. And the Nasdaq pole vaulted 2.44%. Too many of the so-called pro-COVID stocks in there, you know what I mean? First, when you look at the pictures of lines to get into bars in Ohio or Wisconsin this weekend, I'm sure you saw them. How about those packed beaches? I mean, do you have to, like, you know, rent a cabana there? There's none left in Jersey, even in Florida. Well, it's clear America's reopening for business. There are plenty of new rules and regulations to keep people safe. Masks, social distancing, hand washing. But all across the country, people are just ignoring them, right? I mean, it's almost business as usual. Crowded tables. Talk about better to be sorry than safe. Living in New York, I know this virus is incredibly contagious, and I really hope the rest of the country doesn't have to find out the hard way. But even though this behavior seems reckless, I have to tell you that seeing all those lines kind of did make me more confident about the economy. Did. Seemed somehow good, even though I know it could be dangerous. Second, we got a look at a totally reassuring, almost avuncular Fed chief when Jay Powell sat down with Scott Pelley in 60 Minutes. Good interview. Powell quietly let it be known that there's no limit to what can be done to fix the economy. He understands that it's impossible the Fed to run out of ammunition. Boy, does Powell ever have our back. It was powerful stuff. It was kind of reminding me of when Ben Bernanke did that in 2009 in March, said, listen, no more banks are going to fail. And that was the beginning of the next layer of the bull market. The next leg started on 60 Minutes. No, that would be history repeating. Could it be? Powell's positive commentary boosted markets overseas, and more importantly, it sent the price of oil surging.
Buy, buy, buy!
Over 30 again. At these levels, most of our producers are solvent. Thanks to all these signposts of strength, we knew we were going to have a real good day. I mean, the Dow was looking like it was going to open up 350 points not long before the bell. I heard Joe talking with Becky and Andrew. It's going to be a good day. And then, boom! The news hits. Moderna. Moderna, the biotech company that uses artificial intelligence to find new gene therapies and vaccines, announced some promising news from the phase one trials. I know that's early. Bear with me for the COVID vaccine. Tiny study, 45 people, very preliminary. But we did get a positive read-through. Normally in phase one, we only care about safety. You're just making sure the vaccine doesn't hurt anyone. This time, though, we learned that 8 people who got a higher dose of the vaccine were able to produce antibodies that hopefully can stop the virus over a longer period of time or even at all. Now, nobody wants to be too optimistic. The media handled this thing. The media did a good job. They were responsible. All the reports were muted, safe, promising, encouraging, might prove fruitful. This data doesn't prove anything. It just shows that Moderna might be on the right track. That was the verbiage. Yet the market reacted with reckless abandon, like those people who hit the bars and the beaches this weekend. We know that the fastest vaccine to market from start to finish was the mumps vaccine. It took 4 years. How's the HIV vaccine? How long did that take? We've never been able to make one. But Moderna's got something that sets it apart from its predecessors. See, they use artificial intelligence powered by Amazon Web Services, like everything else in the world, calculate trillions of permutations and find the right formula. If you can eliminate tons of dead ends and blind alleys in a blink of an eye, well, that really does speed up the discovery process. If anybody can develop a vaccine in record time, it is indeed Moderna. And that's potentially huge. So far, the only drug we have is Gilead's Remdesivir, an antiviral that gets patients with severe COVID out of the hospital faster. Even Gilead doesn't claim that it saves lives. Thin gruel. But a vaccine? Oh, man, that is a game changer. And everyone, all the smart people told me, forget this, Jim. You're just getting too excited. Don't believe the hype. It can't happen. And then this happens this morning. It was pretty eye-opening. This could be one of the shortest recessions in history. Even as it will also be maybe the sharpest. When you look at the stocks that soared today, they're the ones in the COVID blast radius. Travel, oil, autos, homes, the banks. Today was the first day where I felt like maybe the banks aren't going to go under. I thought they were looking like going down the drain with Drano, which I used last week. It actually works. Oh, no, it was Liquid Plumber. They both work. Without Powell's bullish statement and this news from Moderna, the only real news we would have had was from the financials. And it was the dispiriting fact that Warren Buffett dumped the bulk of his shares of Goldman Sachs. Instead, Goldman stock rallied 4%. A reasonable response. Goldman stock fell 4%. You figure it would go back up 5%. You figure it would something. Goldman stock's hot again. How about that? Now, look, I was shocked by some of these moves. United Airlines up 21%. Norwegian Cruise Lines up 18%. Marriott and Royal Caribbean up 17%. If you didn't know any better, you'd think the vaccine is in the bag. I mean, all have just, we have within a few months to start booking things. It's not that silly, though. I looked at prices for a Norwegian cruise this morning. I found a cruise going to Alaska next year. You could take it about a year from now, and it was one third of what you would have of what it would have gone before the pandemic. And not only that, if you think the vaccine will be readily available next year, get this: why not book now and cancel later? There's no charge. I think this is like a great idea. If Moderna doesn't come through, well, there are so many companies working on this. You have to believe that maybe there'll be another. Regeneron, J&J, Pfizer, Inovia, Novavax, which, be careful, filed a big offering tonight. Yet the optimism is that palpable. Now, a lot of people on Wall Street expected that all the money that's gone into the COVID-19 winners would simply migrate back to the losers as we get closer to normal. But that's not what happened today. There's too much momentum in the winners. I think the drug stocks, the cloud stocks have been the biggest winners. And the retailers that are big enough to thrive in this environment, they're all going to report this week. The people who own these names weren't willing to sell, except for in a handful of cases like a Zoom or a Peloton. Do you really want to dump NVIDIA right before its quarter? You want to bet against Facebook, brand new smart small business strategy? You want to abandon Google when it looks like it might come up with something out of this recession sooner than expected? I don't know. Of course not. So you had a weird session where the COVID winners rallied a bit, and the cyclical COVID losers exploded so high that it almost felt like a gigantic bear short squeeze. If the vaccines really come in faster than we thought, it makes sense for Nucor, a steelmaker, to run up 7%, or for the home builders to be up double digits. Their valuations were so cheap that they deserved to move up. But in the end, though, today proved why you need what I call a barbell strategy, like the one I laid out for my charitable trust, which you can follow along by joining the ActionAlertsPlus.com club. You need a barbell with the COVID-19 winners on one end, the stay-at-home stocks, the economic recovery winners on the other. Okay, here's the bottom line. The barbell portfolio is the best strategy for today. The ones that if the vaccine fails and for the what if the vaccine makes it. All right? That's what you want. But you know what? I know we got good news from Moderna, but let's hope this safety last attitude goes away. Because if there is another big outbreak and we have to go back into lockdown, many of today's winners will come right back down. Okay, let's go to Elaine in California. Elaine.
Yes, booyah, Jim.
Booyah, Elaine.
My husband and I are longtime listeners and first-time callers.
Oh, great. Great to have you on board. What's going on?
Well, the first stock my husband ever bought was Clorox.
Yes.
That was in 1975, and he had just graduated from college.
Oh, wow.
He bought less than 100 shares because that was all he could afford. But in the 45 years since, he's reinvested every dividend. Obviously, the coronavirus has had a huge impact on Clorox earnings, and we know the company is working 24/7 to try and meet the demand for its wipes. Our question is whether now is the time to take the money and run, even though we don't really need it, or should we write it out a bit?
No. This is one of those stocks that if the Moderna vaccine works, then things can get better in the country. But in the interim, do you think we're ever really going to go back to the way we were? I mean, maybe. But I think you got a long time where Clorox is going to do very, very well, and particularly overseas where things are really not so strong. I want you to hold on to it. Could be rocky for a little bit, but I want you to own it. Matt in Florida. Matt.
Hey, booyah, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Booyah.
New listener, first-time caller.
Fantastic. Absolutely. Second first-time caller. All right.
My question is on Sorrento Therapeutics. SRNE is their stock.
Yes,
name.
I know.
They've had tons of recent gain. They're up from $2 a share to $7 a share, peaking at like $9.80 today, up 138% since Friday. My question is this a stock that's actually viable, or is this short-term excitement over their COVID antibodies?
I think it's short-term excitement. Look, if companies play with a total open hand and show us everything and the stock goes up that much like Moderna did, I'm totally fine with it. Without a total open hand, then I'm going to say I want to be careful. Now, I know everyone who owns Sorrento and bought it since Friday who hears that I want to be careful is going to look at Twitter and say, you know what, he's the worst guy ever. And all I can tell you is I'm Jimmy Chill, and I love you anyway. Right, Wall Street Today thought it was better to be sorry than safe. Yeah, safety took a vacation on Wall Street. The barbell strategy is what I want you to do, okay? Half the ones that do well and half the ones that do not so well. On them both. You would have done great today. Mad Money Tonight. As many states begin to reopen, how is a company like Denny's Grand Slam positioning itself? I'm talking the future of the restaurant industry with the CEO. Then with the market headed higher today, is the narrative changing? I'm giving my take. And the COVID-19 pandemic has driven home the importance of communication and collaboration technology. I'm talking the CEO of a smaller cap company that is uniquely positioned to take advantage of the space. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on Twitter. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag mad tweets. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Get a vaccine by late this year or early next year, and the data we just got from Moderna suggests that is a real possibility, then that means we can go back to normal. Not the new normal where you have to maintain physical distancing, but the old normal where restaurants and retailers can operate at maximum occupancy again. So does that mean it's time to start speculating on the restaurant stocks? Take Denny's, the full-service diner chain you know that I love, which is nearly 1,700 locations worldwide. It's mostly franchise locations in the U.S. When the pandemic hit and we went into lockdown, Denny's saw its stock plummet from $22 down to $4.50, where we first started liking it, if you remember, at the March lows. Because as a sit-down restaurant chain, well, it was a sell first, ask questions later situation, right? But since then, the stock's been about to rebound. It's been rebounding pretty aggressively, more than doubling since the bottom, including a fabulous 10% run today off this Moderna vaccine news. Plus, just last Thursday, Denny's reported a better than a fewer quarter. And management told a story of gradual improvement now that the second quarter's underway. Don't get me wrong, this is a very tough business to be in right now, but if we can fully reopen this economy sooner than expected, Denny's can make a comeback sooner than expected. So let's check in with John Miller. He's the CEO of Denny's to get a better sense of how he's navigating this difficult period. Mr. Miller, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me today.
All right, so John, are you how closely do you follow the whole vaccine thing?
Well, I think there's good news today. Obviously, prevention and cure would give everybody a lot of relief and confidence to go out and shop and return to a normal, whatever new normal may look like post-pandemic.
Well, do people when they how many of your restaurants right now are serving people in the store?
521 of 1,600 domestic locations have some inside dining service at the moment.
What happens if a group of eight people come in like I used to after having a couple and we just love Denny's, want to get a little sop up? Would you break us up or turn us away?
Yeah, so we're trying to keep it at parties of six inside same family. Social distancing is an absolute must. We're doing temperature checks for all of our employees before they come back to work. We've gone to what I'd call best practice measures for health and sanitation. But yes, by all means, customers would be welcome. They would come in for the states where it's 25% that have a little more distance between them, states that are 50% or municipalities that are 50%, a little closer together, as close as 6 or 8 feet. We have tables marked that are not open so that guests can feel safe. And yeah, you'd be welcome and have a normal Denny's experience overall.
Okay, so how about the 82% of domestic franchise restaurants? How is that Paycheck Protection Program working for them?
Yeah, so PPP, of course, you know, all of our franchisees are small business owners. In fact, 70% own 5 stores or less. And so when the register's not ringing and you're closed, it's pretty difficult to make it for very long. So our franchise community did apply for the loan. We assisted them where we could with a national broker to assist with franchisees that may not have had the best relationships with an SBC lender or a bank that was good at the PPP lending right out of the bat. Our larger franchisees figured it out, and many of our smaller did without our assistance. But I think, you know, we were right there side by side working to help them secure as much liquidity as possible. 82% of our, right at 82% of our restaurants have received the loan. Another 7% have been approved and are waiting for funding. And then those that haven't, we're still assisting to figure out if they need it or not. Some are part of larger systems with other franchise mm-hmm. businesses that are not as affected as much as full service is and may not have needed it quite as badly.
All right. Now, you've done remarkable things with your balance sheet over the years and your buyback over the years. But then there's something like this comes along. Completely, this is just a business interruption from hell, frankly. What have you done to shore up your balance sheet?
Well, of course, you know, right away, we focused on liquidity and focused on our franchisees' liquidity primarily because we are a 96% franchise business. So as our franchise system goes, so goes the brand. On the corporate balance sheet, we did draw down on our balance sheet roughly $40 million. We took an additional $20 million draw, and then we've secured a new credit agreement. We feel like we've done everything we can in our power to make sure that we go uninterrupted for as long as possible. And we have all the confidence that we will not have a liquidity challenge at Denny's as a result.
Well, that's what matters. Now, you guys have been a pioneer in digital ordering and delivery infrastructure. How's that working? And are some of these delivery companies taking advantage of the situation and charging too much?
Well, I think, you know, every business model has its own business model, right? So the third-party delivery companies are doing a great job with technology and creating, eliminating pain points for consumers. We've adopted third-party delivery options in most of our markets and multiple ones, and where they each have their own business clientele and some that overlap, some that does not. So we try to have as many of those as possible. I would say that they're doing their best for their, to make their model work, and we're doing our best to negotiate for our model to work. Okay. Cost, packaging, lower beverage sales, all those things create a different business model and different economics for to-go sales. But clearly, it's in demand for the consumers, and our Denny's On Demand program, it's more than doubled. It's up about 110% versus last year since the pandemic started.
But at the same time, the same store sales have been very tough, right?
Yeah, as bad as 80% down, and then the stores that are open, we're in that 50% range.
Oh, 80% down. How do you come back from that? How do you come back from that, John? I mean, because that's a tough pantry, you know, pantry kits. I mean, what are we doing here?
Right. So as obviously we have all the confidence we'll rebuild momentum in our brand. We have great franchisees that were smart and wise with managing cash. It has been challenging, no doubt about it, but we're on twice weekly calls with our steering committee body. We have great franchisees that have been in the system a long time. They get a lot of support from us. They support us in return with great initiatives, and they move quickly to adjust to the real-time issues. I've been very impressed with the number of dine-through, curbside, drive-through, exterior hostess stands, touchless credit card systems, all the things we've done very quickly in real time to adjust to consumer needs. We've tried delivering some groceries or providing groceries through drive-through service, not because we think it's a permanent important part of our business model, but just to provide services for our guests to give them a little convenience for when they're getting out. And as confidence returns, as normal returns, whatever that might be defined as, we do believe people will want to dine in. We will have pressure on the weekends when we're full capacity. But right now, we are open. And more opening all the time. Between now and the 22nd of May, another 85 stores could open as this lifts across other states in the country. And we're looking forward to having 100% of the markets reopened in the dining room. We are ready.
All right.
Ready and clean and able to take care of our guests.
Well, you know, we've been backing you all the way. We just got to hope you come back. We want to double. Thank you so much, John Miller, CEO of Denny's.
Good to see you.
Mad Money's back after the break. Remember Selling May and Go Away? I've always hated that stupid little ditty. And today's incredible action shows you just how wrongheaded it is. May's turning out to be a pivotal month for the U.S. economy, and not in a bad way. But it's not just Selling May and Go Away. It's this whole genre of prediction. Every year, people make forecasts about what might happen based on historical patterns. And every year, I push back because you just can't extrapolate that. You can't. It doesn't work. 2020 is nothing like 2019 or 2018 or 2017 or 2016, no matter what month it is. This time, it's even more important because tons of companies that reported last month, Well, they were incredibly downbeat. Now, you can't blame them. They made their predictions at a time when most countries still hadn't bent the curve, and we had no idea whether we'd be able to contain the coronavirus. Things looked very bleak when they made those forecasts. So when you listen to their conference calls, almost no companies raised estimates. Instead, you had a huge number of businesses that just abandoned their forecasts and a ton of others that eliminated their dividends outright. In retrospect, though, the last week of March and the first weeks of April, when most of these big companies reported, seemed like they were the worst period of all for the economy. Businesses already started coming back as states gradually lift their lockdown orders. Unlike the financial crisis, when everyone in Washington was in total denial about how bad things had gotten, this time the Federal Reserve swiftly attacked the problem with every tool at its disposal. Fed Chief Jay Powell effectively backstopped $1 trillion of bond issuance. That's the equivalent of all the bonds that were issued last year already by now. He acted immediately. During the financial crisis, it took over a year before the Fed started doing anything really decisive. In 2007 and 2008, many different markets froze up. Commercial paper, price of mutual fund redemption, mortgages, so many others. This April, every time one of those financial horrors sprung up, Jay Powell pulled out the bazooka. He didn't try to play whack-a-mole. He just told people to stop worrying because he'd spend trillions propping up these markets if he had to. So if you were betting that we'd see a replay of the financial crisis here, which many of the hedge funds were, Powell crushed you. 2020 is not like 2008. The most amazing thing, the Fed didn't even have to spend much money to make it happen. Powell saved the system merely by telling people he'd do whatever it takes. When you do that and Wall Street believes you, the problem takes care of itself, as we saw again yesterday when he spoke on 60 Minutes. And look at today's action. At the same time, the Treasury Department and Congress doled out trillions in subsidies to individuals and small businesses. 2008, Congress didn't act until after Lehman Brothers went under and nearly took down the whole financial system. This time they acted fast and the stimulus hit in the second half of April, too late for these companies to include in their forecast that really matters. Despite everything the government did, tons of money managers were convinced that it simply didn't matter. Hence the sell in May and go away dictum that seemed to have more gravitas this year than ever. That was a mistake. I like to hark back to the days when legendary Peter Lynch ruled the money management business from his perch at Fidelity's Magellan Fund. Lynch had a great rule. Quote, far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate corrections than has been lost in corrections themselves, end quote. In other words, rather than trying to get out ahead of a potential decline, sometimes you just need to stay the course, because that way you don't miss out on incredible rallies that come out of nowhere like we had today. Now, many of these companies that were extremely negative in April have since had much more compelling things to say or are going to tell you many more compelling things. The despair that colored the beginning of earnings season has been busted. I think we'll see when Walmart, Home Depot, Target report this week, the narrative has changed and changed for the better. Unfortunately, if you sold May and you went away, I think it's too late. Too late to get back in. Dave in Illinois, Dave.
Dr. Kramer.
Dave.
So, Jim, I'm curious about your vegetable garden. Full plant, partial plant, or no plant?
100% full plant, except for one little area where I just got some special artisanal seeds that Dave is going to crush them when I go plant, when I go making my cans later this year. If you're nice, I may have to send you one.
Can't wait to see it on Twitter.
It'll be there. Getting trashed a little today. What's up?
Last month, Chipotle reported a strong quarter, beating on top and bottom lines. You have recently favored the likes of Wendy's and Starbucks, gradually reopening stores in China. As such, Restaurant Brands International is meeting challenges in supply chain disruptions, upgrading their technology, and expanding Tim Hortons and Popeye's Louisiana kitchens into recently reopening markets in China. So, Jim, I see opportunities ahead.
No, you're right. And the guy was on. He quit himself well, Dave. But I've got to tell you that Chipotle, I said when it was at, $300, that it would go to a G. That it would go through 1,000. And it went through it today. And all I'm going to do is say it's going higher. That's the one to be in. Greg in Georgia. Greg.
Booyah, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Booyah.
Harley Davidson's new CEO announced a transformational plan called The Rewire, returning focus to core markets which drive positive cash flow while also recognizing the need to excite a younger consumer. Their CFO noted that they have ample liquidity to ride out the remainder of 2020. With today's lack of entertainment options and plenty of open roads, should we hop on even after today's big move?
You know, that's a big move today. I think it could have another good day, but I'm not a big fan because of the demographic of who rides it. It's just too old. And I know that that's, hey, listen, it's okay. I can say it, right? I have the ability to say it because I went to one and everyone looked like me. All right. One of the dealers. Good dealer. Sell in May and go away? Not! Today's actions, how wrong. How just how wrong that statement is. And I hate it. Now, I do think, though, after today's rally, it may be too late to get back in if you sold in May. Anyway, much more Mad Money ahead, including my exclusive with the company up nearly 60% over the past month. Do not miss my sit-down with Avaya. Then I'm looking ahead to the future beyond COVID-19 with the man at the center of it all. And all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stay with Cramer.
Tomorrow, kick off the trading day with Squawk on the Street. Live from Post 9 at the NYSE.
David, I'm never going to mention again that you said that you didn't have any friends and didn't like friends. That's done. Okay, that's
first
done.
Of all, that is not the
finished.
Quote.
That's finished.
All right. I'll see you on the Amalfi Coast.
It all starts at 9 a.m. Eastern.
A week ago, we got an incredible quarter from a company that many people feared was caught in the COVID blast radius, Avaya. This is a major business communications play. They're the world's largest pure play on unified communications and contact center solutions, where they're very big. There's a good chance your employer uses Avaya for their phone system. When the market was rolling over in March, this stock got crushed. Who needs phones when everyone's working from home? But last week, Avaya put those concerns to rest when it reported some phenomenal results, a big revenue beat coupled with a solid earnings beat and some very good guidance for its the next quarter. In response, the stock soared 22% in a single session. Hey, it just keeps running. It's up another 5% today. Why? Because the new Avaya is about a whole lot more than phones. They help enable remote working and business collaboration. They've got a partnership with RingCentral, the cloud-based communication software play. We know that's been great for RingCentral, but it looks like it's also been good for Avaya. So can the stock keep running now that it's less than a buck away from its February highs? Let's take a look with Jim Chirico. He's the president and CEO of Avaya. To learn more about the quarter and where his company's headed, Mr. Chirico, welcome to Mad Money.
Jim, great. Thanks for having me on.
All right, sir. We've had RingCentral on a number of times. I want to know from your side what it has meant to team up with Vlad, because it seems like it sure is great on his side.
Yeah, you know, Jim, partnering with an industry leader, especially in the UCaaS space like RingCentral, is really truly industry defining. I mean, who would have ever thought we would partner with a competitor? But when you take a look at it through the lens of our customers, it really makes a lot of sense for the company. We have more than 100 million UCaaS seats deployed out there in the marketplace today. And one of the key strategies for us is actually to activate our base. And Avaya Cloud Office coupled with RingCentral allows us to do that. And in fact, it's exactly what our customers wanted. You know, we just launched it in the end of March. We're seeing great traction. In fact, we're only 40 days in, and we just closed last week our first seven-digit TCV deal. It was thousands of seats, and more importantly, we did it with RingCentral, Avaya, and one of Avaya's leading channel partners. We stood it up in less than 24 hours, and it really was driven in support of COVID-19 for one of the local governments. So we're really excited about the opportunity. We think it's going to unlock tremendous value. It's certainly a growth opportunity for the company. It's early on, but another exciting opportunity for us between now and the end of the year, we're going to deploy this in 9 additional countries. So excited about the opportunities in front of us.
Okay, so let's put it in English for our viewers who are not familiar with the phone business. The state of Mississippi, massive spikes in call volume from people obviously asking about COVID-19 since nobody knows anything. What did your system do?
Well, with COVID-19, with the state of Mississippi, you know, obviously they were getting inundated with folks calling in trying to determine what their test results were. So over the weekend, we installed our cloud platform with AI and really implemented a SMS implementation
messaging
such that the citizens of the state of Mississippi can get their results back real time. So a huge stress reliever.
Now, when you get something like that, don't states talk to each other? I mean, doesn't another state say, listen, I just did this Avaya thing. You ought to try it. How does it work?
Yeah, in fact, it does, Jim. And the state of Mississippi isn't the only state by which we deploy this and or in other governments. I'll give you an example. Even from a work from home solution, which this is, you know, back when we started to see the pandemic taking hold in early February, I contacted a number of my peers and to each and every one of them said, if you could do 3 things for me, get my employees safe, productive and work from home. Since February, Jim, we've deployed more than 2.5 million work-from-home remote licenses to do just that. So it's for governments like in Brazil and UK, and even closer to home, the State Department, SSA, Social Security Administration, as well as that House of Representatives, are using Avaya work-from-home technology. And for our large enterprises, companies like Humana, we immediately moved 21,000 of their employees to work from home. Deutsche Telekom, 7,000. Comcast, over 20,000. And an industry-leading global BPO, Teleperformance, over 100,000 remote agents we deployed in days, not weeks or months.
So, Jim,
only Avaya has the scale.
But where are we? I mean, today, all anyone was talking about was Moderna. RingCentral was down. Why? Because people say, well, this move is over. I look at it quite differently. I think that when you deploy these systems, and if they work, and if business doesn't go, if revenues don't go down, I know expenses are much lower if you do it at home, particularly because of rent. I mean, isn't it a here-to-stay option?
Yeah, you know, I think, quote, the new normal is indeed here to stay. It may be a bit of folks working a little from home, a little for the office. But in this new digital and distributed world, we are seeing great demand for our work from home solutions. In fact, most of them are now driven through our subscription offers, which couple cloud technology with our on-premise capabilities. And we're now becoming a leader in hybrid. So I believe it's here to stay.
So tell me a little more about how the RingCentral deal works with you. I mean, when someone, I mean, you have a lot of existing clients. You're giving RingCentral more business than they're giving you.
Well, you know, Jim, we had an uncovered base out there of 100 million seats, and our customers really wanted an Avaya solution. And when they wanted to move to the cloud, we couldn't fulfill that demand, and they looked for alternative pure cloud plays. I can tell you we've won well over 100 deals so far, and each and every one of those have been competitively bid, and Avaya is winning. Our customers want to stay with Avaya. We have a trusted brand. We have high quality. So it's a win-win situation, I think, for both companies.
So would your customers, say, be gravitating toward keeping Avaya and gravitating toward Zoom, and instead it's just really easy to flick a switch and have RingCentral?
Well, you know, Zoom's a little bit different. If you take a look at what we're doing from a video perspective.
Yeah, you're doing B2B.
Our B2B solution is really for the enterprise, and it's more than video. It's video, voice, as well as collaboration. We just released it back in February, and we're seeing significant traction. And what's different from our application than your typical consumer is the fact that, you know, security, data privacy, redundancy, they're all table stakes. Right. A number of your consumer applications are a little bit more susceptible to having outages, pop-ups, data being sold. So, you know, ours is an enterprise solution. We're deploying it around the globe. We are at 500,000 licenses deployed since the release of February, and we continue to see demand increase week over week.
Excellent.
So we think it's really applicable for the large enterprise.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're on the show. The stock has been a rocket, and deservedly so, because where we are in America right now, that's Jim Chirico. He's the president and CEO of Avaya. Thank you so much, sir.
Yes, thank you, Jim.
Mad Money's back after the break. It is time! It's time for the lightning round! And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Skate down! It's time for the lightning round! Let's start with Andreas in Georgia. Andreas!
Jim, a big booyah from Augusta, Georgia.
Perfect.
I really appreciate your continued vigilance on the financial front line of this pandemic for all of us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
I'm calling this evening about your recommendation on Seattle Genetics.
Oh, I like Seattle Genetics very much. They've got some new formulation anti-cancer drugs. They're not going to shine on a day like today because today's the day where your people want to buy auto copies. But I think that they've got an amazing pipeline, one of the best I've ever seen. And I think you should own the stock. Let's go to Ray in Connecticut. Ray.
Hey, Jimmy. How are you?
I am good. How about you?
Hey, let me say hi to my mom and dad in Queens, Astoria.
Why not?
And I'm calling about Qorvo.
Oh, I think Qorvo's fantastic. They made a major Skyworks, Qorvo. These are all levered to 5G. I mean, I got a whole list of them. I write about it all the time. Marvell Technology, levered to 5G. Qorvo's not necessarily the best one. I do want them on. I want them on because I haven't had them on in ages. Let's go to Blake in Wyoming. Blake.
Booyah, Jimmy. How we doing?
Real good. How about you, Blake?
Oh, I can't complain. I got Penske Automotive Group. We got the captain at the leadership helm. I think it's a buy. What are your thoughts?
I actually think it's a very inexpensive stock. I don't understand. I mean, I know it had some... Well, that stock is way too cheap. I know the franchise dealers have had troubles, but that's ridiculous. I think that stock's too cheap. Let's go to Brian in Hawaii. Brian!
Aloha, Jim.
How are you? You have zero COVID in Hawaii. Congratulations.
Virtue Financial.
I think it's a very smart, good company with a lot of really smart people. And I'm surprised that it's still only it should be more of a fintech company. It doesn't deserve a 9 multiple. It deserves about a 12 multiple. Let's go to Raymond in New York. Raymond.
Hi, Jim. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Great. I wanted to call you up at Exxon.
I don't like Exxon as much as Chevron. Chevron's a better run company right now. It just is. And that's Exxon was always king, and Chevron's the king. It's good to be the king. Let's go to Ron in New Jersey. Ron.
A big booyah, Jim, from Blairstown.
Oh, Jim, I love Blairstown.
What are your thoughts on the growth and earnings potential for ET Energy Transfer?
I would dump that right into the Delaware water gap. Let it go up a couple of points and then just drown it. Let's go to Kate in California. Kate.
Hey, Kramer, I'm so happy that you're still on the air to keep my brain from exploding.
Love. Really? All right, well, you can put them back down there.
Hey, can you walk me through what's happening with MasterCard? Up 4% today, but still down 18%.
It's levered to world travel and world commerce, and that's hurt the stock. But look, my challenge is that I think it's a terrific situation. But remember, we have to be cognizant that, again, it had came into this COVID with a 40 multiple. And that's too rich, given the fact that worldwide commerce is slowing. How about Mark in Florida? Mark!
Hi, Jim. It's great to talk with you. I wish I had acted when you recommended Moderna when it was in the teens, and
oh,
I didn't.
Thank you.
But my question is about RingCentral.
I think RingCentral's terrific. RingCentral is one of those companies that's going to be down on a day like today. Why? Because it's very good for the office at home. All right, that's what RingCentral stock and trade is. That's why it was down 22. There's nothing wrong with it. Vlad Shmunis is still doing a fantastic job. Give it a couple days, and it's going to start moving up again. But it is up 55% for the year. I'm going to throw in Okta. I feel the same way. Okta's a little bit stronger because there's people like, it went down a couple bucks. I like these two, but they're going down right now. And that, ladies and gentlemen, conclusion of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by TD Ameritrade.
For the first time I can remember, we're having a healthcare recession. In order to deal with the pandemic, hospitals suspended all sorts of non-emergency procedures. That's a problem if you need knee replacement, and it's a potentially existential problem for the hospitals because these surgeries are how they really make their money. Hospitals have been working overtime to beat this virus, and the process, well, they're losing fortunes when they're doing it. But now that it's looking for, like our healthcare system won't be overwhelmed, what do they need to do to bring back these procedures? What's the safe way for hospitals to go back to something closer to normal? I want to hear from an expert, which is why I'm thrilled to have Scott Sperling. He's the co-president of Thomas H. Lee Partners, and more key to us today in this crisis, the chairman of Massachusetts General Brigham, which happens to own one of the most important hospitals in the country. Mr. Sperling, welcome back to Mad Money.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, so Scott, fill me in. We bent the curve so we wouldn't be overwhelmed. It looks like that's been accomplished. We have a huge number of empty, I guess, ICUs all over the country. At the same time, the hospitals are bleeding from the eyeballs for cash. What are we supposed to do?
You're exactly right. So let me give you a couple of small data points. At the peak, we had built capacity. We had more than doubled our ICU capacity to handle COVID-19 patients that needed high acuity care. Every one of them had ventilators, so we had almost 900 such ICU beds. We utilized at the very peak about 70 to 75%. We never got close to 100%. So we had the capacity to handle what was the largest surge that we had imagined. We are currently only utilizing about 33% of that peak capacity. So we've been able to take some things down. But to your point, the net result of the success that we've had addressing the truly great need of COVID-19 patients has been that we have lots and lots of other patients who have had delayed procedures that we may call elective, but to them it creates significant pain and potentially very expensive and longer lasting complications. So I will give you, some sense of that. We have seen a 30% reduction in cancer diagnoses. It's not because there's less cancer. It's because people aren't coming in with the symptoms.
Amazing.
We haven't had that. We have not been able to do the surgeries on things such as significant orthopedic procedures or even brain surgeries that often can be delayed but do cause significant pain and suffering for patients. The result is not only the economic crisis for the healthcare system that you mentioned, but it is a truly worrisome national healthcare crisis for so many patients of so many different age categories. We've done a remarkable job, and when I say we, it's not me, but it's our caregivers. It's the individuals who are running our system. It's the Ann Kolbanskis, who's the CEO of Mass General Brigham, and the Peter Slavins, the president of Mass General, and Betsy Nabel, the president of the Brigham, and Ron Walls, and so many other people, Greg Myers of the world, the Tim Ferrisses. These are people in our system who have done a remarkable job at trying to make sure that we can improve the outcomes for the COVID patients. And that's something that we've done quite well.
Well, but Scott, so, why don't you talk about that for a second? Because I think that your outcomes, it varies so much from state to state. Other states, people listening to you will know that you guys figured out a lot of stuff that they should figure out.
So, for the most vulnerable group, over age 80, in March, half of those people were not able to survive. Today, 75% of them are able to survive based on what we know to do with these patients. We know much better when to use respirators, how to use them. We know how to treat the kidney disease that has come around with this. Things like remdesivir, which the early indications are very strong. We've seen all of that. We do know that given the nature of how it works, which is to stop replication of the virus, the earlier you use it, the more powerful the impact could potentially be. And so we're going to see that. We've taken the med-surg patients who have COVID-19 down from 6 days of staying in the hospital to four. We've taken the ICU patients from 14 days to 10. And again, we're seeing much better outcomes.
What do you think about
prepared to deal with whatever comes next, whether it's another surge or more likely a chronic level of patients at a much lower level, but that will last until we have a vaccine.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about, because you see, I see all these pictures this weekend about the bars with big lines and the packed beaches. I mean, to me, look, you're chairman of a great hospital system. Is that a nightmare waiting to happen, or are we just in the Northeast just too cloistered?
Look, you've seen wide variation. So, for example, New York had over 1,400 deaths per million, right, and Florida had 82.
Oh.
I know people were critical of Governor DeSantis in Florida, but one of the things that he did that was so smart that I think, he may have done better than, for example, New York, is he targeted a population where you can isolate and protect them. So much more aggressive at making sure nursing homes, no visitors, everybody gets tested who's a caregiver. So we really need to learn lessons from this, that we can look at the most vulnerable populations where the death rates are dramatically higher and deal with those. In the middle, we should use common sense.
Right.
It's low cost to wear a mask. It's low cost to keep 6 to 7 feet away from somebody else. You can go to an outdoor stadium and hopefully not be too close to people. Probably not crowd back into an indoor venue
right,
at any point in the near future. So there's a number of things that we can do that are common sense, that are low cost, that will help us as we manage through this. And again, keep in mind that, as you know, flattening the curve is about spreading this out. It's not about eliminating the eventual number. It's about spreading it out so the healthcare system can deal with it. But as I mentioned, the thing that people have to understand is the healthcare system has so much more capacity and capability to deal with this. Now what we have to make sure is the healthcare system itself doesn't die. And to your point, if you look at the financial situation, community hospitals all through Massachusetts are on the verge of not being able to make payroll. Our own system is losing billions of dollars. So, you know, we need to make sure that we have the ability to take care of the people who need our help and who depend upon us. So there's a financial element. But as I said before, you know, more importantly to our people, it's taking care of the 30-year-old who doesn't have COVID-19 but who has a serious ailment, who has a serious neurological issue, who has diabetes. We have a huge spike in the number of amputations. And the reason for that is people with diabetic infections of some sort are not coming into the system. Those are not things that we've been able to deal with. And we need to get back to dealing with that. And it's so important that we recognize we have the capabilities. It's time for us to get back to helping all of the people of this country.
All right, Scott, it's always great to have you. You have more insight than anyone else we have on this situation. Scott Sperling is the chairman of MassGen Brigham. And boy, I'll tell you, he really understands what the hell's going on. Also, of course, co-president of Thomas H. Partners. Stick with Cramer. Coming up next on CNBC, Moderna reporting early positive results from trials of its vaccine. Hear from one person who actually got the shot. Wow, that would be great. Plus, Abbott Labs' top infectious disease doctor on the accuracy of this company's virus test. You know they've been under a lot of fire there. And the future of fitness. One gym owner's plan when he's allowed to reopen. All new with Scott Wapner. Look, the Moderna news is blockbuster because no one expected anything yet. We don't know how well it would be, but we sure know that this was about as good as it gets, considering, and that's the way you have to look at it. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise you I'll find it just for you, right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer, and I will see you tomorrow.